I was talking with my daughter, Lily, and I told her that I was thankful for her. And she said, "Why, Dad?" I said, "Because you helped me see things." "Like what?" I said, "Well, you know, for instance, I see the leaves on the trees." She said, "What? How do I help you see? You couldn't see that without me, Dad?" I said, "No, Lily, I mean, I can see it without you. But there's a difference between seeing and noticing. You help me notice them, Lily." Separate occasion, earlier this week, Lily was swinging on her swing set at our house in the unseasonably warm weather, loving it. And out of nowhere, no conversation at all, we're just sitting there, I'm pushing her, she just blurts out, "My two favorite seasons are fall and spring because they're so colorful." Okay, so that's nice, Lily. I see it. Lily notices it. Isn't that one of the gifts that children bring to us? Right? Children have this capacity to notice the world around you. You kind of get to relive in some ways through the eyes of a child when there's one near you, right? Because there's all these things that are all around us all the time. I see them, but I don't necessarily notice them. Lily notices them. She wonders about her world. And I wonder if wonder is in short supply in the age in which we live in. I had a pastor friend, this was several weeks ago, and I heard his message. He was talking about this reality. He said that, "I fear we live in a time when people are in awe of nothing." It's a danger of our time, isn't it? When we have so many things at our fingertips that we have created, we have designed, we have engineered, right? We have screens with notifications and emails to attend to and shows that we're trying to watch and push through. All these gadgets and things that take our attention away from everything else. It can be easy to miss or maybe not to notice the beauty all around us. Well, I hope this morning that Proverbs text helped to inspire awe in you. Because it really is a wonderful text. Now let's look again at what it was telling us about the world around us. So this is Proverbs, or this is wisdom, rather, speaking personified, right? And wisdom is saying this: ages ago I was set up, before the beginning of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water, before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. So in the middle of the Bible, in the book of Proverbs, we have really another Genesis account. This is another creation account, but from a separate angle. And wisdom is saying that, yes, I was there at the beginning in creation for the creation of the world. Check out what it says next. It says, when he established the heavens, I was there. When he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters might not transgress his command. When he, God, marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him like a master workman. What's the significance of this different angle of the creation account? Well, I think what it tells us, what it communicates us, is that this world was created with design. Right? This is no accident. There is purpose and meaning and intention built into the creation. And if we were to look around at the world around us, we should expect to see that. And alas, if we look, depending who we listen to, we do. I'll share with you a couple examples. These all come from a book called Cosmic Chemistry, where different experts in the scientific fields share what they see in the natural world. So here's a couple. It says, the distance from the earth to the sun must be just right. Too near, and water would evaporate. Too far, and the earth would be too cold for life. A change change simply of 2% means all life as we know it would be eradicated. The planet must rotate at the right speed. Too slow and temperature differences between day and night would be too extreme. Fast, I love the imagery here, you know. Wind speeds, too high. That's not good. You don't want to be on a planet that's spinning so fast that you're blown off of it, right? The results would be disastrous. Astrophysicist Hugh Ross, he suggests that a planet like ours, existing here, the chances of it occurring, he says, is about 1 in 10 to the 30th power. Right? To those of us who forgot math or don't care about math, it doesn't mean anything. To those of you who know math, your eyes right now are bulging out of your sockets. Let me give you an illustration, okay, to demonstrate that. So 1 in 10th to the 30th power. This would be the same as, imagine this, you covered the entire surface area of America with coins, all right? So quarters, cover the entire surface area of America with quarters. Now stack quarters on those quarters in a giant column all the way to the moon. Now do that on a billion other countries the same size as America. Color one of those coins in one of those billions of towers red, and then blindfold your friend and have them pick a coin at random. That's the chances of this world existing. If your blindfolded friend finds the red coin in one of those billions of stacks. You see how staggering that is, right? How inconceivable, really, it is that you and I exist, that we're here on this planet and we're alive. It's a miracle. This is no accident. And that's exactly what Proverbs 8 is trying to tell us. That there's a reason that you and I are here. We were designed, we were planned. And look, we were even loved. The reading goes on to say that wisdom was rejoicing in his inhabited world and delighting in the children of man. And I know when we read the texts on a Sunday morning, they come kind of fast, and I don't, you know, usually set them up with lots of context. So you may not have connected the Colossians text with this Proverbs text, but Paul was doing something very intentional in our epistle reading. He was riffing, if you will, off of this Proverbs 8 text. When he wrote in Colossians that there's this one who has come who was the firstborn of all creation, right? The one who was possessed at the beginning, as Proverbs 8 put it. The one who created all things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. The one in whom all the fullness of God pleased to dwell. Paul is saying that this wisdom of old, the wisdom with which God created the world, is actually Jesus Christ. He is wisdom in the flesh. He was the one begotten from all worlds, in whom all things were created. And so, in a sense, Jesus is actually the wisdom of this world. Now that begs a really interesting question, right? Which sort of leads to point number two. Okay, if that's the case, if everything out there was formed and is held together by this person, Jesus, why don't I see him? I mean, that's a clunky way to ask this question. Why is Jesus hard to find? Why do we miss him? Why don't we just see it all the time? Why don't we walk out of here and Monday through Saturday just have Jesus sort of on our minds and hearts constantly, every second of the day, if he's wrapped up in everything? Why are there pews in churches all around the country today that are empty if it's so obvious that Jesus is holding all creation together? And that's the point, right? The way of wisdom, it's embedded in everything, but it's not obvious. You might say that there's something at work within us that detracts us from this plain truth. Kind of like getting older and not noticing the beauty in the world around me. There's something in me and in us that blinds us to the beauty of God, that dulls our senses to it. Listen to how the Apostle Paul put it in Romans 1. He says, "The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made." See what Paul is saying, right? Look at the world. Notice. It's evident. We did not form this world. We did not create it, but there is a design to this world. Therefore, you and I and all of creation, we're in a certain relationship, but we're the creature in this relationship, right? There's a God, there's a creator, and we are creatures. If you look at the perfection of this world, you see how well it runs, sometimes even better when we don't interfere with it. It's evident, right? You might say self-evident. There's a power out there that is greater than us. Therefore, we're called to submit to it. Not really even ask. That's just the nature of the relationship. And not just to submit to it, but even to praise it, right? To look at the beauty of the world around me and to say, wow, thank you for placing me here within it. But that's not what we've done, right? Paul goes on in Romans 1:21. Yet Paul says, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. The truth was suppressed, right? It was pushed down by what? By unrighteousness, by sin, by our sinful nature. You see, this is the problem. This is why our vision is skewed. This is why folks are missing from pews around the country today. Because something other than God is receiving their praise or their thanks or their glory. There's something else that they feel is more worth their time and attention, their investment. In short, something is blocking their belief in what otherwise would seemingly be self-evident. And that really shouldn't surprise us when we consider the life of Jesus. Right? If Jesus is this wisdom and wisdom incarnate, well, then that's exactly what we'd expect to see when Jesus walked the earth, and it is what we see, right? I mean, here you have wisdom with hands and feet, flesh and bones, a mouth to speak. And what happens to Jesus? Right? He's rejected. John chapter 1, which gives us another creation account, another perspective, very cool. You can read it on your own time. But John will go to say this a little down the line in John 1. He says, he was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. Jesus came to bring life and bring life to the full, and humanity scoffed. What good can come from Nazareth? And isn't that still true today, that humanity scoffs? And I don't just mean humanity out there. I mean humanity in here. Don't you and I still scoff at the things of God that are hard for us to hear, hard for us to think of as wisdom? Don't we still sort of wrestle with God as if we could wrestle with the Creator, wondering if His wisdom for us is really the best wisdom, or maybe there's some things we can figure out ourselves? Maybe there's some stuff that he said that's just kind of getting in the way. Wisdom says, do not lay up treasures for yourself. but instead lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. Wisdom says, give your money away. Give God, the Creator, the first fruits of it. Don't forget who it is who actually sustains you. Don't just give him meager offerings. Don't just give him the leftovers. Give him a tithe. Give him 10%. 10%? How am I supposed to get ahead? How am I supposed to get those things in my life that I really want if I'm always having to shovel out the first fruits? Humanity scoffs. Wisdom says, do not resist the one who is evil, but if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. You got to be kidding me. How am I supposed to let, I'm just supposed to let him get away with it? Someone does me a wrong and I can't pay back? That just doesn't translate to me. That doesn't seem like wisdom at all. That seems like foolishness. Wisdom speaks, humanity scoffs. Wisdom says, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous. God's word says, practice abstinence before marriage. Don't cohabitate, don't sleep together to figure out that you're supposed to be together. Save that. Save it for the thing I've designed it for, marriage. Oh, come on, Pastor. That's outdated, right? I mean, surely we've come far from those olden times. How am I supposed to know if this person is the one for me? Humanity scoffs. And to be clear, those three examples could all be sermons in their own right. There is a lot to be said for those three things. But it's true, isn't it? There are some things that just seem outrageous to us and certainly to the world, and humanity scoffs, but wisdom still stands. Wisdom still calls out to creation. Wisdom says, hear instruction and be wise and do not neglect it. Blessed is the one who listens to me. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from Yahweh. But he who fails to find me injures himself. All who hate me love death. Blessed are those who keep my ways. But you haven't. And I haven't either. And we would be in one heck of a mess if Jesus was just another teacher, if Jesus was just another wise guy. And in some ways, Jesus is a great teacher, right? If the world put into practice the ethical principles that Jesus teaches, if you and I did that, we would experience such bliss and peace in our relationships. If humanity built a society around that, my, would it flourish. Oh, that would be so good. In the world, they would look at such a community and they would take notice. They would wonder about a community like that. But Jesus is more than a teacher. And that's really good news. Because every other teacher says, live by my ways and you will live. But Jesus says something different. See, he is wisdom for you. Jesus says, I have come to live and to die for you. Jesus says, I have come to live the life you should have lived and to die the death you should have died so that you can have life in my name. So that you can go to the Father, you can go to God, and on account of Christ, you can say, accept me. I'm yours. I am perfect in your sight because of what Jesus has done. And wisdom says, don't suppress me. Don't leave me boxed in to 1 hour of your week. No, let me come and inhabit your life. Let me come in and show you my righteousness. Let me come and be your truth. Jesus says, I have come. I have found you. I have saved you. Now let me be your wisdom. He is the wisdom that you and I need. He is wisdom incarnate. He is all in the world. He is connected to everything we see. And when you know that, you can go in the world and you will see him. But he's not obvious. Not if you have not heard this word of truth. But you have. You have heard how Jesus has come for you, how he has died and risen for you. And now you know that he is wisdom for you. So go in that strength to a world that may not know about this wisdom. And show them this wisdom, not that you have found, but who has found you. And it's in his name that we go. Amen.